Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Deadline nears for DSL conservation programs. Permian Basin oil and natural gas producers with acreage that includes dunes, sagebrush, lizard habitat have only a few days left to enroll in a conservation agreement. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on May 17th issued a final ruling listing the lizard as an endangered species under the Endangered Species Act, giving operators, ranchers, and others active in the lizard's habitat 30 days to enter a conservation agreement. At the time of the final, the service also found a critical habitat designation for the lizard was prudent but not determinable, giving the agency up to 1 year to propose critical habitat. Quote, as you are all well aware, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association has been working on the issue for about 15 years now, end quote. Ben Shepard, president of the PBPA, told the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, in spite of the industry's significant and comprehensive efforts to conserve the habitat and the species, the service has chosen to list the lizard as endangered. The justification for the listing is flimsy at best. There are three different maps estimating the habitat range, creating significant confusion for operators and ranchers alike as to whether they are in the habitat. Dunes, sagebrush, lizard, population data is almost non-existent, end quote. Shepard added that the association has been urging members to join one of three authorized conservation agreements designed to provide protections and participation in these programs has been very strong. Quote, in spite of these and other efforts, the service chose to list the lizard anyway. Unfortunately, this is another in the long line of punitive actions the Biden administration is taking against the oil and gas industry, end quote, he wrote. James Mayer, founder and chief executive officer of Green Century Exploration and Production, echoed that sentiment, commenting to the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, this listing appears to be another step by the Biden administration to harm the oil and gas industry. It's amazing to me that President Biden and his Democratic Party claim to be advocates for the poor and the downtrodden, yet their policies of scarcity that result in higher gasoline, diesel fuel, electricity, food, and housing costs hurt those they claim to defend hardest, those struggling to make ends meet. Not to mention the harm being done to America, end quote. In reacting to the decision listing the lizard, the PBPA has stated that the decision is not supported by available science and flies in the face of state-sponsored conservation efforts, which includes the enrollment of hundreds of thousands of acres and the commitment of millions of dollars in both Texas and New Mexico to support the lizard. The PBPA also states that the decision is inconsistent with the service's own decision in 2012 to not list the lizard, a decision based on the creation of conservation agreements that the service deemed effective. Furthermore, PBPA notes that the service approved additional conservation efforts for newly active industry on the landscape. There are three conservation agreements that can utilize for the lizard. In New Mexico, the DSL Candidate Conservation Agreement with Assurances, CCAA, is administered by the Center for Environmental Health Monitoring and Management. In Texas, the 2020 CCAA for DSL is administered by Canyon Environmental, and the Texas Conservation Plan is administered by the American Conservation Foundation. Velocity celebrates 5 years of invoice factoring. In 2019, Velocity Financial tapped an ancient form of financing, invoice factoring, to help oil field service companies finance operations. The company has just celebrated its fifth anniversary. The company was founded by oilfield veteran Trip Womack when he saw service companies having trouble accessing bank capital, even during good times. Sun Wright Services serves as chief executive officer and Irene Hinojos as president. Quote, it's been interesting with all the consolidation, end quote, Wright told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. While Permian Basin-focused Velocity serves companies of all sizes, he said there has been some shakeups among clients. One benefit of consolidation is business has been steadier, he said, but there remain opportunities. Quote, there's still hesitancy among banks to lend, and that's the gap we try to fill. People can pick and choose when to use invoice factoring. It may be they don't want to use a bank, or they're a startup company and not ready for bank financing, end quote, he said. It would be nice to see more bank capital invested in the industry, he said. Invoice factoring involves companies purchasing invoices directly from their clients. In the Permian Basin, this is frequently used by service companies so they don't wait 60 to 90 days to get paid, and Womack said clients like that flexibility. Velocity currently serves 40 clients, 80% of whom are in the oil and gas industry. The company looks at deals up to $5 million a month, but can do bigger, he said. One thing that differentiates Velocity from other factoring companies is its simple fee structure, transparency, and lack of exit fees. Coming out of the pandemic, he said business grew quite a bit and has been steady in the last year. Quote, we're seeing more business, more startups, more activity, end quote, he said. Clients range from staffing companies to transportation companies to manufacturers as well as service firms. Quote, that's the great thing about the Permian Basin. There's no shortage of entrepreneurs, end quote, he said. He credits his father's entrepreneurial spirit with seeing the need for Velocity and for building a great factoring team. Quote, our goal is to become the best factoring company in the Permian Basin, and I feel we have the team for that, end quote, he said. Quote, we plan to continue doing what we've been doing, building a great business, end quote. Oil well spewing foul black water. Foul black water has erupted from another West Texas well in the same area as one that flowed toxic water for weeks and inspired a controversial no-fly zone in December. The latest well, discovered Saturday in northern Pecos County, is about 14 miles from the, quote, unusual, end quote, Crane County well that erupted in 2022. It's roughly 5 miles from the so-called Lake Bomer, the infamous ever-growing 60-acre body of poison water spewing from an old wildcat well. It's the latest sign of trouble under the aging oil fields just north of Fort Stockton, where water under pressure can travel underground, at times carrying radioactive elements, chemicals, and other oil field waste, until it finds the path of least resistance to the surface, often an unplugged well, and bursts through. A spokeswoman for the Texas Railroad Commission, which regulates the state's oil and gas industry, said crews have been at the site in Pecos County since Monday, working to plug the orphaned oil well. Quote, we are containing and removing the fluids and preparing to plug the well, end quote, she said Thursday. The state is treading water with its list of more than 8,000 orphaned oil and gas wells, which are neglected wells left to rot by oil companies that have gone bankrupt or no longer exist. The commission's crews are working steadily to plug orphan wells, yet the list is growing just as fast. Skylar White, who owns the Pecos County property, said the latest well is just one of about 250 orphaned and neglected oil wells threatening to spring to life across his 20,000-acre cattle ranch. Quote, you just never know when one's fixing to fail, end quote, he said. The Railroad Commission has plugged 9 wells on his ranch this year, White said. 6 of the 9 were trickling out dirty water, but this one is the worst he's seen on his property. Quote, this one's by far flowing more than all the others combined, end quote. Viewpoints. Greenwood 4-H students prepare for national competition. A quartet of Greenwood High seniors is ready to put their livestock judging skills to the test as they prepare to compete for the national championship in Nebraska. Cade Watkins, Carly Robinette, Tatum Bales, and Addison Fautinot qualified for the state 4-H Roundup Livestock Judging Competition in April and competed at state June 5th in College Station, where they placed 5th. In September, the team will compete at the 97th annual Axarbin Stock Show in Grand Island, Nebraska. While showing animals may get most of the attention, judging is perhaps even more important. Quote, the reason we learn to judge animals is because our food doesn't miraculously come from the grocery store, end quote, said Laura Robinette, Midland County 4-H Youth Development Assistant and mother of competitor Carly. Quote, these kids are learning what a quality animal looks like so that it goes to the packer and then to the store, end quote. Robinette said Midland County has had a judging program for about 25 years and that only 3 other teams have qualified for nationals. Quote, these 4 kids are like brothers and sisters, end quote, she said. Quote, they're their biggest supporters, end quote. Students who participate in agriculture programs like 4-H have an edge when applying for college, Robinette said, and can even qualify for scholarships. The team from Greenwood isn't sitting on its laurels this summer while waiting for the big national show. They'll travel around Texas to continue honing their skills at various competitions. Restaurateur adds Cajun flair at eatery. Kim Herard and husband's Indulgence Catering Company offers full-service catering and more. When Kim Herard Herard was 12 years old, she cooked an entire Thanksgiving dinner all by herself. That's when she knew she wanted to make cooking a career. Quote, "I learned at the feet of my grandmother Gloria," end quote, Herard said. Quote, "She was an exceptional cook and an even better baker. Being from Louisiana, she taught me Southern style and Cajun cooking. To this day, if you can put bacon grease in it, I'll cook it. And most things I prepare have a little Cajun influence in them," end quote. Herard and her husband, Wes, are the owners of Indulgence Catering Company, which includes full-service catering and an event venue called The Hall at Briarwood. They just recently expanded The Hall at Briarwood to also include an outside area that is open to the public on Friday evenings for family-centered dining and on Sundays for brunch. Quote, "I didn't immediately start my career with catering and event venue services," end quote, Herard explained. Quote, "Even though I knew from the time I was 12 that I wanted to work in the food industry, it wasn't immediately apparent as to exactly what that would look like," end quote. Herard was born and raised in Midland. In 2004, she graduated from Lee High School, now Legacy High School, where she was a varsity cheerleader for 3 years. She then attended Midland College, MC, and was a member of the cheer team from 2004 to 2006. She said that one of her most memorable MC moments was cheering at the 2005 NJCAA men's basketball tournament in Hutchinson, Kansas. Quote, "I loved going to Midland College," end quote, Herard said. Quote, "It was just what I needed to finish growing up," end quote. After leaving MC, Herard attended Le Cordon Bleu School of Culinary Arts in Austin. Quote, "Culinary arts school gave me an opportunity to refine my skills that up until that time had just been learned from my grandmother and my own trial and error methods," end quote, she explained. Quote, "When I originally started at Le Cordon Bleu, I wanted to concentrate on patisserie and baking. However, I soon discovered that the precise measurement skill required for that specialty was not my thing. I loved all my classes and excelled in most, except ice sculpting because I couldn't use a chainsaw. Believe it or not, the hardest class was eggs," end quote. While Herard was attending Le Cordon Bleu, her father became seriously ill with lung cancer. She put her career plans on hold and came back to Midland to help take care of him. A few months later, she met Wes at Buffalo Wild Wings in Midland, and they purchased their first food truck and brought it all the way from Denver. That food truck, called Midnight Munchies, was the beginning of Indulgence LLC, and it spent the next 10 years outside of the most popular bars and clubs in Midland, mainly rock and rodeo, between the hours of 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. In 2008, after her father was on the road to recovery, Herard finished her studies at Le Cordon Bleu and graduated with an associate degree in culinary arts. Indulgence and Midnight Munchies food truck were already on their way to making Kim and Wes successful entrepreneurs. When the oil business took off in 2009, so did the growing business. Quote, "In those days, we did a lot of oil-filled caterings," end quote, Herard said. Quote, "One of our food trucks expanded to 3 food trucks, and we purchased an 800-square-foot building from Lynn and Deborah Sockwell, who owned the Gourmet Peddler. We soon outgrew that place. In 2017, after Graham's Pharmacy closed their location on Briarwood, we rented the building. It had everything that we needed, a large space with a commercial kitchen, but I was terrified. It was a big investment for a 30-year-old, end quote. Herard said that the first thing she did after acquiring the space was hire a pastry chef. Soon, the staff grew to 6 employees, and they recently hired an additional 6 more event and bar staff when the outdoor area opened a couple of months ago on April 19th. The only thing that was not successful for Kim and Wes after expanding their business to a bricks-and-mortar location was Gloria's Diner. Quote, "I wanted to open a restaurant in our facility," end quote, Herard said. Quote, "I got everything ready, designed the menu, and named the restaurant after my grandmother. On March 8th, 2020, Gloria's Diner opened. Then 1 week later, the world shut down because of the COVID pandemic. Gloria's Diner suffered the effects of COVID, and we closed the restaurant. However, I'm very proud of the fact that Indulgence remained in business, and I was able to retain all of my staff," end quote. In 2023, Kim and Wes sold the food trucks in order to give their full attention to operations at their Briarwood location. Kim gets the kitchen started every morning and spends the afternoons working on finances and administrative details. Wes handles maintenance and is the grill master. A typical week includes 30 to 35 caterings, feeding 150 to 200 people each day. They also cater at Bush Convention Center, with December being their busiest month catering corporate Christmas parties. In addition, they cater for the Green Room at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Their food has been enjoyed by the likes of Governor Greg Abbott, Josh Allen, Senator Ted Cruz, Miranda Lambert, former Vice President Mike Pence, and Dwight Yoakam, just to name a few. Kim and Wes have a 9-year-old son, Connor, and 2 19-year-old cats, Lump and Fluffy. In her spare time, Kim enjoys gardening, and whenever possible, she tries to use her homegrown vegetables and the food she prepares at Indulgence. Vacations usually include trips to Oklahoma to visit Wes's 95-year-old grandmother and beach trips to Port Aransas. Quote, "One of our favorite destinations is Las Vegas," end quote, Kim said. Quote, "When I'm there, I love to sample the cuisine. I guess I'm just a foodie at heart. All I've ever known is cooking, and I still love it," end quote.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, June 18th. Board to consider adopting budget. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will have a public hearing for adoption of the 2024-25 budget at 6 p.m. June 18th in the Administration Building at 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The estimated expenditures for 2024-25 is $349,223,000, but the revenue is $337,748,000. This creates a $12 million decrease to the fund balance. The deficit would be $24 million without cuts, Chief Financial Officer Deborah Otmers said. Last year, the adopted budget was $332,243,451 for revenue and other sources, $345,648,500 for expenditures and other uses, with a net expected decrease of $13,920,049. However, at this point, the actual anticipated decrease to fund balance is around $2.5 million for the 2023-24 school year, Otmers said. There will also be a discussion of and request for approval of a resolution to calculate the property tax rates. The proposed tax rate for 2024-25 will remain the same as it was for 2023-24 at $1.014 per $100 valuation. Also on the agenda is an update on work on the bond issue, including plans for the new Career and Technical Education Center, Middle School Transition Learning Center, bond sales, fine arts, athletics, and many agreements. On June 6, the district sold $99,545,000 worth of bonds at variable rates to investors. Investors were interested in nearly $216 million for the nearly $100 million the district had available to sell. ECISD successfully sold all of the bonds with an initial interest rate of 3.62%, supplemental agenda material said. The interest rate is 0.12% above the estimated rate of 3.50% presented to the board in the preliminary financing plan on March 26th. The interest rate is 1.63% below the information provided in the voter document in November 2023. The material said, had the bonds been sold as fixed rate bonds, the interest rate would have approximated 4.57% and the district would have incurred $2.3 million more in interest costs. In fine arts, a total of 286 instruments have been ordered to benefit all high school and middle school band and orchestra programs, along with the harp program and middle school choirs. The next instrument orders will include instruments for mariachi, elementary, and additional middle school band. Work has been ongoing on the lighting project at OHS and Permian High School athletic fields. With permits obtained and underground work started, installation of the light poles should begin July 1st, the material said. Language has been finalized with Gordian, and 8 requests for proposals will go live on June 26th. The RFPs include general contracting, along with trades such as roofing, plumbing, weatherproofing, and more, their material said. In other bond-related items, the board will consider a request for approval of architect-owner contract for bond program construction between ECISD and Park Hill for a new agricultural farm facility, a request for approval of a construction manager at risk contract, and general conditions of the contract for construction between ECISD and Tynert Construction for a middle school, a request for approval of a construction manager at risk contract, and general conditions of the contract for construction between ECISD and Tynert Construction for a CTE high school, a request for approval of a construction manager at risk contract between ECISD and Tynert Construction for Permian High School auditorium renovation, request for approval of a master agreement for program management services for bond program construction projects, including between ECISD and Gallagher Construction Company LP. The board also will deliberate the hiring of an executive director of accountability and school improvement and executive director of leadership. The agenda and backup material can be found online. Abbott appoints Hoard Stodge Hill to Public Safety Commission. Governor Greg Abbott has appointed Dan Hoard of Midland and reappointed Steve Stodge Hill to the Public Safety Commission on terms set to expire on January 1, 2030. The commission oversees the Texas Department of Public Safety, which enforces law protecting the public safety and provides for the prevention and detection of crime. Dan Hoard of Midland is founder and partner of Headlock Investment Company, LP. He is board chair of the Scarborough Foundation, co-chair of the Executive Campaign Committee for the Young Life Camp, Lone Hollow Ranch, and member of the Baylor College of Medicine Development Board. Additionally, he is a former member of the Baylor University Board of Regents. Hoard received a Bachelor of Business Administration from Baylor University. Steve Stodge Hill of Dallas is a partner at Winston & Strawn LLP. He is a member of the State Bar of Texas and Dallas Bar Association, Research Fellow for the Southwestern Legal Foundation, Charter Member of the Patrick E. Higginbotham American Inn of Court, and a former member of the American Bar Association and Texas Bar Foundation. Additionally, he is a board member of the University of Texas UT Harry Ransom Center Advisory Council, UT College of Liberal Arts Advisory Board, UT System Chancellor Council, and the Southern Methodist University Meadows School of the Fine Arts Executive Board. He is the former chairman of the American Film Institute National Council and a former member of Boy Scouts of America Circle 10 Council Executive Committee. Stodge Hill received a Bachelor of Arts from UT Austin and a Juris Doctor from UT Austin School of Law. Scholarship Presentation. Ector County Independent School District announced Monday that the Pathways by One Objective Scholarship and an additional scholarship in honor of Anthony Bolton will be presented to 5 recent ECISD 2024 graduates. The award ceremony will take place at 1:30 p.m. June 19th in the Ector County ISD Conference Room E on the second floor of the ECISD Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Each recipient of these prestigious scholarships will receive a one-time award of $5,000 to assist with their freshman year college expenses this fall. These scholarships are part of our ongoing commitment to support the educational aspirations and achievements of our students. The Pathways by One Objective Scholarship recognizes students who have demonstrated academic excellence and personal strengths of character and perseverance. The Anthony Bolton Scholarship honors the legacy of Anthony Bolton by supporting students who have shown resilience, leadership, and dedication to their studies. Paraprofessional of the Year tops career off in style. Transition Learning Center Special Education Aide Sulima Jaquez capped off her career right, winning the Paraprofessional of the Year award from Ector County ISD. Jaquez has been with ECISD for 21 years and retired this year. Micah Pettigrew, Special Education Autism Homebound 18-plus supervisor, said Jaquez should have gotten the recognition years ago. She started in January 2002. She is an amazing paraprofessional, just constantly doing what's best for students, doing what's best for staff, doing what's best for the overall program, making sure that students get served in the way they should have been, Pettigrew said. Jaquez started subbing and then started working for Pettigrew. She asked me if I wanted to work full-time, and I said yes, and I've been here ever since, Jaquez said. Pettigrew said they have been in classrooms for 8 hours a day for all those years and never had an argument or disagreement. Because I respect her and she respects me, we respect each other's position. She's just amazing, Pettigrew said. Jaquez said she decided to retire because she feels the work in her body. I'm going to be 70 in October. I'm thinking I need to sit back, Jaquez said. The kids are what she likes best about her job, and they are what she will miss. I have a special needs brother. I'm his guardian, Jaquez said. She never thought she would win something like Paraprofessional of the Year. Jaquez and everyone in Transition Learning Center were told they were going to have some visitors and needed to be on their best behavior. I was in my room and I heard all kinds of noises, like somebody with nails or something. I looked down and she was talking to Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray, and they stopped right in front of my door, and I said, "Whoa, what is this?" They all came in to surprise her. I never thought I was going to get something like that, Jaquez said. Pettigrew said she tried to get Jaquez to become a teacher. I tried and tried, Pettigrew said. She's so intelligent, so smart. I told her over and over again, please go back to school and become a teacher. Jaquez said she likes to help out and doesn't want to be the one in charge. Pettigrew said it's very important to have someone like Jaquez on staff because she knows she can count on her. The only time she ever has missed in all those years was when she absolutely had to. I know I can count on her, and that's a huge thing because with the type of students we have, we've got to make sure that staff members are here and in place and where they're supposed to be at all times, or things can happen, Pettigrew said. Jaquez keeps things organized so everyone knows where things are. In her retirement, Jaquez said she'd like to do yard work, but she is also going to sub. I love yard work. I would do that more, but my son is living behind me and he's not letting me do yard work. I'd like to take out weeds. I like to have a clean yard. So when her son goes to work, Jaquez said she'll go out and work in the yard. Jaquez and her husband, Hippolito, have 3 children and 4 grandchildren. MCH Community Diabetes Clinic will be closed Wednesday, open Thursday this week. Medical Center Hospital's free Community Diabetes Clinic will be closed on its normal day this week, Wednesday, June 19th. However, the clinic will be open on Thursday, June 20th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. This clinic is located at the former urgent care location at 1940 East 42nd Street. The clinic is free and is for initial diabetes diagnosis and basic treatment for people who do not have insurance or a primary care provider. No appointments necessary. Walk-ins during open hours are welcome. Drug shortages keep on growing. Older injectable medicines are among the most vulnerable. Erin Fox has tracked drug shortages for more than 20 years, but she sees no easy solution for what has become a record run. Total active shortages hit an all-time high of 323 in this year's first quarter, according to the University of Utah Drug Information Service. That's up about 86% from a 10-year low of 174 last reached in 2017. There were 48 new shortages recorded this year through March, according to the data published by the American Society of Health System Pharmacists. Still, Fox also sees positive news developing. The Associate Chief Pharmacy Officer at University of Utah Health spoke recently with the Associated Press. The conversation has been edited for clarity and length. Question: are there any signs of this letting up? Answer: unfortunately, no. We haven't necessarily solved some of the root causes. We have overall relatively few manufacturers. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration halted inspections during COVID. Now they're back at factories that haven't been inspected for 5 or 6 years. They're finding some things to fix. Those fixes can take anywhere from 6 to 18 months for production to get fully back on schedule. Meanwhile, other companies don't necessarily have the capacity to ramp up production to make the difference. It's not the FDA's fault. We want them to find those quality deficits, but when FDA goes back out looking all at once, it can be pretty disruptive. What are the typical drugs that land on the shortage list? Generic, injectable, hospital drugs, or older drugs. They are usually pretty low cost. There's not a lot of resilience in the supply chain for other company to make up the difference. We saw those chemotherapy shortages last year in part because a large factory in India, the FDA, found quality problems there. They made a large amount of the U.S. supply. The other companies were unable to quickly make up the difference. Things have definitely improved, but the factory is still not running. What is one thing about shortages that patients underestimate? They shouldn't automatically assume they won't be able to get that treatment. It might be delayed, or they might have to take a capsule instead of a pill. They might have to call their insurance company to ask if they will cover the brand, because sometimes that is available while the generic is not. Don't panic. It's frustrating to have to do a little bit of work, but usually you will still be able to get a treatment. Is there any good news? Last year, Congress held 4 hearings on shortages. They're still very interested. People are really starting to talk about doing hard work, both on the policy side, but also maybe a little bit of congressional action to really try to make this problem go forward. I've been leading our effort to provide data on drug shortages since 2001. This is truly the most interest I've ever seen. Phillips 66 Christmas in Action team up. Through a philanthropy grant program, Phillips 66 was able to grant Christmas in Action $20,000, which will go toward any home repairs needed in the program. Christmas in Action is a 501c3 nonprofit agency that, in partnership with the community, repairs homes of low-income elderly and/or disabled homeowners by putting Christian values and principles in action. Along with the company's donation, Phillips 66 employees will be doing a volunteer event from 7:30 a.m. to noon, June 21st. UTPB announces new dean for College of Health Sciences. The University of Texas Permian Basin is pleased to announce that Dr. Ron Barredo has been named the new dean of the College of Health Sciences. He will begin his new role on August 1st. With nearly 30 years of higher education experience, Dr. Barreto will play a central role in fostering excellence in teaching, research, and engaged learning in the college. We are thrilled to welcome Dr. Ron Barreto to UTPB. UTPB President Dr. Sandra Woodley said in a news release, "His extensive background in health science education and his commitment to student success align perfectly with our goals. Dr. Barreto's leadership will undoubtedly bring a new vision and enhance the quality of education and research within the College of Health Sciences." Dr. Barreto joins UTPB from Tennessee State University in Nashville, Tennessee, where he served as the Dean of the College of Health Sciences. He earned his Doctorate of Physical Therapy in Physical Therapy in 2005 from Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions in Provo, Utah. He went on for his Educational Doctorate in Education in Professional Practice in 2002 from Trevica Nazarene University in Nashville, Tennessee. "I'm excited to join the Falcon family at the University of Texas Permian Basin. UTPB is an impactful institution that serves a diverse student population, and I am honored to contribute to its positive impact as the new Dean of the College of Health Sciences. In this role, I look forward to building upon the college's tradition of positively shaping the health trajectories of the individuals and communities it serves. I am eager to work alongside the dedicated faculty and staff to further the college's mission and foster innovative approaches to healthcare education, research, and service," Barreto said in the release. The College of Health Sciences at UTPB is home of the School of Nursing, Department of Human Performance, Department of Social Work, Department of Community and Health, Family Health, and the Center for Interprofessional and Experiential Learning. We are confident that Dr. Barreto's expertise and vision will help grow the College of Health Sciences," said Provost and Senior Vice President of Academic Affairs, Dr. Raj Dashyanamurthy. "His proven track record in health science education will drive our mission forward, helping our students succeed and produce high-quality health science graduates for our community. We look forward to the innovative leadership and the positive impact he will bring to UTPB." Juneteenth celebration is 5 days. Juneteenth has only been a federal holiday for 3 years, but the Black Cultural Council of Odessa has been celebrating the event for more than 2 decades. This year, the council will be celebrating its 25th year of hosting Juneteenth in Odessa, with events that will educate and honor the meaning of the day. "We're committed to our past and shaping our future," Joanne Davenport Littleton with the Black Cultural Council of Odessa said. Made a federal holiday in 2021, Juneteenth celebrates June 19, 1865, when the announcement of General Order No. 3 transmitted news of the Emancipation Proclamation in Galveston, proclaiming the end of slavery in Texas. For 25 years since the founding of the Black Cultural Council of Odessa, the group has hosted the largest organized Juneteenth in Texas. The annual celebration includes events such as live music, games, dancing, and an organized basketball tournament. This year's celebration begins with an official kickoff at noon on June 19th at the BCO's office, 1020 East Murphy Street. The 4th annual all-white party, an event with the dress code mandating white clothing, is scheduled for June 20th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Familiar events such as Youth in the Park and the Parade are both scheduled for June 21st, and musical entertainment is scheduled at Woodson Park from June 21st through June 23rd. Each evening will also include a children's area for young children. Littleton said this year's Hometown Heroes will recognize three members of the community, Helen Jones, Ernest, Derek, and Maggie Hunter. They're full of wisdom, and we want to set aside time to acknowledge them and the contributions they've made to our city, she said. A gospel celebration with the Reverend Mark D. Hood, Sr. from Tyler, Texas, is scheduled for 6 p.m. at the Greater St. John Baptist Church. Littleton said everyone in Odessa is invited to attend the events, saying the community is stronger when together. This is not limited to African Americans. It's open to all, and we welcome everybody, she said. If you go, June 19th, what? Black Cultural Council of Odessa's Juneteenth kickoff, noon to 1:30 p.m. at BCCO office, 1020 East Murphy Street. Free. What? BCCO 25th Anniversary Reception, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. by invitation only. June 20th, what? Dallas Black Dance Theater, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Free. What? Fourth Annual All-White Party, 8 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Odessa Marriott Hotel, 305 East 5th Street. Tickets are $50. Bought in advance, $60 at the door. June 21st, what? Fifth Annual Regina McKnight Volleyball Tournament, 6 p.m. at Ector College Prep Middle School, 802 West Clement Street. Free. What? Juneteenth pageant at 7 p.m. at Blackshear Auditorium, 501 South Dixie Boulevard. What? Talent search at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Woodson Park, 1020 East Murphy Street. What? Kids Corner, 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park, under the yellow tents, free. What? Landon Torbett at 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park, main stage, free. June 22nd, what? Fifth Annual Regina McKnight Volleyball Tournament at 9 a.m. at Ector College Prep Middle School, 802 West Clements Street, free. What? Annual Danny R. Wright Basketball Tournament at 9 a.m. at Permian High School Auditorium, free. What? Youth in the Park, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Woodson Park, free. What? Odessa Reconnect Saturday Fun Day at 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Woodson Community Center, 1010 East Murphy Street. What? Parade lineup at 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. The parade will begin at 8 p.m. at the intersection of South Dixie Boulevard and East Odessa Street. What? Hometown Heroes at 9:30 p.m. at Woodson Park Main Stage. What? Kids Corner, 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park under the yellow tents, free. What? Shiloh, 11 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park Main Stage, free. June 23rd, what? Gospel Luncheon from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at Woodson Community Center, free. What? Gospel Celebration with the Reverend Mark D. Hood, Sr. at Liberty Baptist Church in Tyler, Texas, at 6 p.m. at Greater St. John Baptist Church, 212 South Muskingum Avenue. What? Kids Corner at 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park under the yellow tents, free. What? Slack and Friends, 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. at Woodson Park Main Stage, free. Fort Davis ISD's future looking brighter. Through partnerships with private and public organizations, Fort Davis ISD is turning its financial situation around. For several years, it looked like FDISD was facing the possibility of closure or consolidation. But after an article in Texas Monthly came out in May 2023, where Superintendent Graydon Hicks detailed their dire straits, things started to change. For years, Hicks sent articles to newspapers and magazines talking about the terrible public school finance policy in the state. For 8 years, I've been hitting my head against a wall. Somebody from Texas Monthly wrote an article in 2022, but they didn't publish it until May 2023. A lady that had been a former superintendent in the Valley called me and said, "Did you know you could make these partnerships and generate extra money?" And I said I did not, and from there we just got more information and got rolling with it, Hicks said. The former superintendent he referred to is Michelle Hartman, now deputy superintendent for Fort Davis in charge of the partnerships, who implemented a similar program at Pawnee ISD, where she was superintendent. She works in person and remotely. "This was the difference. I didn't have any option. I had to do something, and this program came up. It was very providential the way it happened. We're making it work. We're not just going to survive, but we're hopefully going to thrive. We're going to be able to pursue some construction projects." When I say construction, I'm talking about just building a shed for our vehicles because they sit out in the sun. Talking about giving some relatively minor raises to our staff. And when I say minor, we're still one of the lowest paid in the area. We're going to take it a bit slow on what they are going to be to do just with the extra funding because he wants to build the fund balance back up. Without these partnerships, Hicks said he didn't know if FDISD would have to close their doors or consolidate. "But I can tell you this, I would have been out of cash by this point already," Hicks said in a June 10th phone interview. According to the Texas Education Agency website, public-private pre-kindergarten partnerships are collaborations between local education agencies, LEAs, such as school districts or open enrollment charter schools, and private child care or Head Start programs. LEAs and private child care or Head Start programs may establish formal or informal partnerships based on enrollment and development activities. The partnerships are developed to reflect the needs of children and families, local resources available, and community trends. It's designed to allow the public school district to get the benefit of having those kids enrolled in their district, and they get credit for average daily attendance. The school district configures their partnership agreement how they may want to share those extra revenues. Maybe they want to hire one of the organization's teachers, or maybe they want to make a lease payment or basically rent the organization's instructional space, or maybe they want to have an administrator. There are multiple ways to configure an agreement that benefits both parties from the extra revenue those children generate being enrolled in the public school, Hicks said. He added that Fort Davis ISD has several partners. "I try to keep it simple, as simple as possible. We don't want any complications, so they give me an estimate of the number of children that they will enroll in Fort Davis ISD in grades pre-K through second. They don't go above second because those kids would then have to take STAR exams, and most of the parents in private schools don't want their children to do that. Kids in kindergarten, first and second are eligible to receive the full allotment of $6,160 per year if they're in school all year long, and they can earn that much money to the district," Hicks said. "Pre-K kids have to meet a certain eligibility criteria, and if they meet that criteria, they only earn half that amount per year," he added. In 2008, his local tax collections were about $1.8 million. The state allocation for Fort Davis ISD from the state was $3.8 million. This year, the district's tax collections are going to be about $1.9 million, and they were only going to get $70,000 from the state. "And I'm still considered property rich," Hicks said. "Now, because of these partnerships, we've been able to negotiate. I'm going to get $1.5 million from the state this year. Next year, I anticipate, we could be getting as much as $3.5 million from the state, he added. Currently, Fort Davis ISD is partnering with three organizations in El Paso, one in Monahans, one in Burleson, two in Alpine, and one in Marfa. Next year, he'll have all those partners plus a private school in Harlingen, possibly one in Austin, and two more in El Paso. Students don't have to attend school in Fort Davis. They go to school wherever they are and are managed by staff at those locations. What's in it for the partners? When Hicks figures out how much money the added students will bring in, which is an estimate at the beginning of the year, he splits the extra revenue right down the middle. One organization, they got the equivalent of about $300,000, so that's extra revenue for them, and it's extra revenue for me, so we're able to meet the needs of children, whether they're in Fort Davis or somewhere else. We've even been able to add some security upgrades to one of our partners, being able to fund some new items for them. Some new access points and some cameras and PA systems. It's very beneficial. It's the right thing to do, Hicks said. This year, Hicks ended the year in Fort Davis with 170 students. Next year, he expects to have more than 700 enrolled, and if another partnership comes through, it could add another 300 or 400 kids. Fort Davis ISD has 43 on staff, including 30 that are teachers and aides. Hicks said they are fully staffed and don't expect to hire more. The district hired Hartman so she could devote her time and expertise to the partnerships. Fort Davis does not have bus routes or a cafeteria, and they offer music but no marching band. We did put a music program back in, but it's not band, just music. We're going to grow it from elementary through high school year by year. We're going to do plays, not just instruments, but chorale, and we're not going to do any marching bands, Hicks said. He said the district is blessed. Things just kind of happened at the necessary time. Everything happened the way it was supposed to happen, and we're just blessed, Hicks said. Hartman was superintendent at Pawnee ISD, a pre-kindergarten through 8th grade district in Bee County, for about 9 years. We paid an awful lot of recapture, so I started examining and looking at ways that we could counter the financial challenges that we were having. We were returning millions of dollars, but yet we were servicing low-income children that needed those services of ESL and all of your special programs, Hartman said. ESL stands for English as a Second Language. We started studying the education code and looked for opportunities of what we can do to solve this. Texas Education Code 11.167 allows a district to go outside their boundaries to form a program or campus or partnerships in this manner. I started partnering public and private Head Start, so some federal programs, community college partnerships, as well as some partnerships that were district and our districts that increased our enrollment. When I started in Pawnee, our enrollment was 136, very similar to Fort Davis, small rural. When I left, my enrollment was right around 1,200, Hartman said. The partnerships also allowed our district to keep its local tax rate low and increase wages to a more competitive level. It really is an efficient way to utilize taxpayer money as well as just quality, Hartman said. Hartman, Hicks, and FDISD board start talking in January of this year. She was also appointed to the board of the Texas Association for Educating Young Children this June. Its website says the Texas Association for the Education of Young Children is a professional membership association that works to increase access to high-quality early childhood education and advance a diverse, well-prepared, and well-compensated early childhood profession. Police: surveillance video captures much of fatal shooting. Video surveillance obtained by the Odessa Police Department shows two murder suspects dragging the 65-year-old victim into his house moments after one of them shot at him multiple times. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a shots fired call from the 1800 block of Newcomb on Friday, and when they arrived, they saw bloody drag marks leading to a house. The officers heard yelling inside the house, detained two people, and found James Francis Johnson dead of a gunshot wound to the neck, the report stated. One of the detainees, Braden Scott Raup, 18, told the officers without prompting, "I shot him," and after being advised of his rights at the police station, he told investigators he shot Johnson with a rifle in an argument over their living arrangements. Video surveillance showed Raup and a 16-year-old girl running out of the house toward Johnson and Raup shooting four times at Johnson, the report stated. It then shows Raup going back into the house as the girl goes off camera to where Johnson's body is. According to the report, while off camera, another gunshot can be heard and the girl comes back into camera view and runs into the house. The pair are then seen dragging Johnson's body into the house. Raup was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of murder and tampering with a human corpse. The girl, too, was arrested on suspicion of murder. Raup remains in custody on surety bonds totaling $225,000. The girl appeared before a judge Monday and was ordered held in the juvenile detention center.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.